Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. When it comes to the popular adage, you can't go home again, Derek Magyar is showing you can. He's replaying and expanding a character from an independent movie 17 years ago for the new scripted, independently distributed series, Boy Culture, Generation X. Magyar and co-writer Matthew Rentenmund join me next. Glenn Mazzara is back executive producing a fictional TV series. It's Beacon 23 coming to MGM Plus Sunday night. Mazzara comes our way next half hour. Over a year after its premiere late night run on USA Network, Barmageddon returns with its rowdy assortment of celebrity stunts Monday night. We'll head Barmageddon side next hour with executive producer Chris Wagner. Also ahead, an extended takeaway of the week on the SAG-AFTRA deal reached Wednesday night and is about to be approved with AMPTP in the next 2 hours. Curtains for the rookie feds, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, speaker and tune-in radio, and presenter of more than 40 podcast sites, including our newest affiliates, Podcast Index and Podverse. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. This half hour is brought to you by Laird Superfood, plant-based coffee creamers, and other products that fuel you from sunrise to sunset. Thank you very much for joining us on this expanded Friday afternoon edition of the program all about TV's current and future. 51 degrees and cloudy at the top of the hour here in New York. We have a jam-packed show for you, a lot of great guests over the next 120 minutes, and yes, we will, in our final half hour, dig in to the SAG-AFTRA situation, ending their strike of over 118 days, with a lot of actors going back to work, writers are now already back at work, and we'll give you the whole 10 yards about what this all means for your TV viewing. We'll have some lessons learned. And we'll also have some winners and losers of the situation. And yes, we will ask our guests to talk about the situation and their reaction as well. And we want to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, speaker or tune-in radio. You can also get involved with our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on that Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Screen, follow those instructions, and other people will be live with you. Our pair from Boy Culture, Generation X, will join us live in a few moments. But first, news notes. In less than 2 hours, Screen Actors Guild AFTRA is expected to get approval for its new deal with the TV Film Producers Alliance, or AMPTP, from its national board. The board's vote tally on the agreement is imminent, and SAG-AFTRA will address reporters in Los Angeles and elsewhere at a news conference that will air at or shortly after 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific. The new three-year agreement contains major artificial intelligence usage guidelines, bonus money for actors involved with scripted mega-content programming, and increased residual compensation. Ratification of the deal among SAG-AFTRA's 150,000-plus membership is anticipated to start next week. No more the rookie feds. ABC made the call to can the Neasley Nash Best starring offshoot of The Rookie yesterday after one season completed this spring. You can also cross off the Good Doctor's effort at a Good Lawyer series spinoff this fall or ever on ABC. Now quickies, the annual Daytime Emmy Awards are set to now happen again on CBS December 15th. That's 6 months after the ceremony was originally scheduled to go, with the writers and actors strikes forcing an extended no-go. Another CBS coming attraction, 2 weeks of Big Brother's Reindeer Games starting December 11th. Paramount Plus, with or without Showtime, will also run the miniseries. Starz' new Spartacus series is now a go. Nick Carraway stars in this House of Assure set of episodes as Assure. It's expected to premiere next year. Netflix begins its run of both Star Trek Prodigy seasons Christmas Day. First season installments will go first, followed by the unseen second set sometime in 2024. Paramount Plus and Nickelodeon have presented the series, the first season, and then it was canceled, even though the second season episodes were completed. And the History Channel offers a variety salute to service special tomorrow evening in commemoration of Veterans Day. Montel Williams hosts, and that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Southern California, the star and the person who did the role in the series, in the movie Boy Culture 17 years ago, now the star of Boy Culture Generation X, live from Southern California, Derek Magyar. Derek, welcome in, and congratulating to you and your wife on your two-month-old baby.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. She's actually 2 weeks old, so she's only 14 days on this planet. So She's a wee little tiny amazing being.
Well, congratulations on the first
Thank
two weeks
you.
And hopefully many, many more great weeks to come. And joining
yes.
both of us now is the co-writer of Boy Culture Generation X. We are talking Matthew Rentenmund. Hold on for 1 second. We should be getting him any moment.
That's right.
Up, there you go. Hi, Matthew. Welcome in.
Hi. Thank you very much. Yes, Matthew Rentenmund. You said it right.
And Matthew, where are you calling from? What city?
New York. So we're coast to coast here.
All right. From one side of the USA to the other, connected. We're going to ask all our guests their feeling about the end of the SAG-AFTRA strike. So, Derek, I'll start with you. What's your thoughts about the end of the strike and how it turned out?
I think it's a pretty loaded question. I think keeping it reasonably short, I think that, it represents progress. I think that, it's still a long road to a true resolution. But I think, some of the most important parts, AI, which wasn't, fully kind of realized in terms of what we got. But I do think that there were some really important things, pay minimums, AI protection. I'm doing this off the top of my head. So, streaming participation bonus, along with certainly, better benefits. And, I think it's a deal that is over $1 billion. So, we broke a lot of ground. There's certainly more protection for actors. I think the whole kind of digital likeness in the world of AI was really taking advantage of actors. And I think that there's been some real headway made in terms of protection on that standpoint. Before there was, I don't think there was anything in the contract about consent. They really, producers and people didn't have to ask for permission to do anything, and now they have to ask for permission to do everything. And then the other thing I would mention is that the people that earn sort of the lowest amount, I'm lucky that I'm in a higher percentile, and I feel very blessed, but it's really, everybody is working in any way they can. As an actor, at this point, you really have to be a multi-hyphenate to have a shot, unless you're on a kind of successful TV show. But now I think that there's something about the union's kind of lowest paid members have also gotten a real bump up in terms of what they deserve. And I'm really, really happy about that, because this is really about everybody in the guild, and also the ripple effect that it has on the industry in general. I think that I'll just try to just keep this really short. That I feel that I know a lot of people that have really felt how damaging this has been, who are not actors or writers, who are Teamsters, who are costume designers, who are, production designers. It's really been a very, very, very challenging time. And I'm happy that a deal has been reached that gives us at least some security for the short term over the next few years, and also brings people back to work. And I think that we needed to go back to work. And I think that I'm glad that those things are able to happen in a fashion that, didn't appease everyone and didn't work perfectly. But, we did the best that I think that could be done, and I stand behind that.
Matthew, what's your feeling about this, especially that the Writers Guild agreement, which was a month or so earlier, they sort of opened up the door for the actors to get their deal?
Well, I mean, I think that AI is the devil, so I'm happy to see that reined in any way that's possible. But ultimately, I'm happy if actors are happy, and most of the actors I know and who I've spoken with are happy with the progress that was made and happy that it's over. So I think it's a big win for them.
Mm-hmm. And in our final half hour, we will have an extended takeaway of the week segment on the situation, the outlook, We'll have lessons learned about how this all went down and some winners and losers. And you might be surprised who some of the winners are and some of the losers are. And we want to hear from you, by the way, also, with your phone calls and chat and reaction. We have got the twosome from Boy Culture Generation X, which is now available, incidentally, on everywhere from Amazon Prime Video to Roku to Samsung. And we have got the star of the series, Derek Magyar, joining us live from Southern California, and the co-writer, Matthew Rentenman, here in Nueva York. Both of them are here this half hour, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Just getting started with a big two-hour episode for you on this Friday afternoon. Simon Applebaum with you live on this pre-Veterans Day Friday. And if a question or comment for our guests, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Three big episodes coming your way next Monday, Wednesday, Friday at this hour. And coming your way on Monday, where does Next Generation TV stand, especially now that 90% of all U.S. households have smart TV sets and smart devices, and the interactive TV era for them is starting to happen? We'll have the managing director of one of the advocate organizations of Next Gen TV, Pearl TV and Shell, will be back with us. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Once again, Monday, Wednesday, Friday next week, and then the following week, our annual Thanksgiving week triple header, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday episodes, all live and all back-to-back. Derek, I mentioned the tease that Boy Culture is you're coming back home in the same role. Why did you decide to do it 17 years after the making of the movie?
Oh, I think it felt right. It's a project that I love so much. It's we're a family, and you know, there were some scheduling things that were making it a little challenging at first. I'm so thankful that was able to be worked out and that I was able to be a part of it, because I can't imagine it any other way. I think that, I really loved playing the role of X in the feature film, and any opportunity to revisit the character, I'm in. I don't even need to see a page. I'm in. So, I was really thrilled that it all worked out, and I'm super excited for people to see the series and really see what's happened to these characters that a lot of people sort of fell in love with so many years ago. And I think it's a really wonderfully written piece by Matthew and also by Alan, and it was great to sort of get the band back together again. We all really care about this project deeply, and so there was just no question for me about my wanting to be involved, and I'm just happy that it worked out and that they wanted me to still be involved in the project. So it was just a blessing.
And by the way, Alan is Alan who? And what's his role?
Alan Broca, the director of the series, as well as someone who's been involved in the writing with Matthew of the television series. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Matthew. I hope I'm not.
No, that's right. That's right.
Okay. So Alan Broca is, the director of the film and directed all the episodes thus far for the series, and he's really the kind of captain of the ship.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, for those people who haven't seen the original film, Boy Culture, what was the film all about, and how does Generation X expand both the plot and the characters?
Well, the original film was about a surly, James Dean-esque hustler. His name is X, that's Derek. And the sort of love triangle that's happening in the apartment in which he lives, and sort of the crossroads that he's at in his life at that time. And what I think is interesting about the new series, and the way we approached it, is because it was so it ended on a very positive note, but because it was so many years later, we were able to go back and explore what happened with that very important relationship he forged in the first film with Andrew, played by Daryl Stevens, and to see where he is now that he's pushing 40. So I think one thing that was addressed in the original, there's an older character, but in the new series, like, everyone is older, they're further down the line, and we can sort of explore aging in the gay community and in sex work. So I think that kind of informs every episode. There's an element of that in there, and it gives Derek a lot, you know, a lot more to play. Like, I think it's really juicy.
Derek, how did you, or what inspired you to play the character in this series the way you did? And I'm also curious whether you used any other films or television shows that have had sort of a, you know, time playing element to create the character. I'm thinking, for example, of the Michael Apted Up movies, where he had, there were documentaries about this group of people at age 7, then age 14, then age 20, and so on and so forth. Apted wanted to do the directing of A Coal Miner's Daughter, since he's passed, won the Oscar for that, playing Mary Lynn. Or, for example, a series like Quantum Leap, or the Richard Linklater film of a couple of years ago that got so many Oscar nominations.
Yeah. Sorry. So what's the hit me with the question one more time.
Yeah. How did you design the character, you know, at an advanced age? What did you use anything that had been done before, like the Michael Apted Up movies, to sort of figure out, here's how I want to play this character 17 years, 18 years later?
Yeah, I mean, I think I what's interesting to me is, again, a lot of it, if not all of it, starts with the writing. And these, Matthew and Alan, Matthew doing, you know, going back to the book, wrote X and wrote these characters with so much life, with such a richness. Then honestly, when I first received the pages for the series, it was so well written that it just really felt like the natural evolution for what would happen based on where things were in the film. And in terms of research, you know, I always am doing research to kind of, dig deeper and you know, sometimes get certain kind of specificity for information. But I try to kind of avoid that for the most part, unless it's something historical or things like that, because it's easy to kind of get pulled by someone else's performance or pulled by a different set of circumstances. So I really try to let the writing inform what I'm going to do, and in this series, it worked so well because it was written so well that I was able to really just kind of drop back in. And you know, I have a lot of scenes with, you know, I have a lot of scenes with Daryl plays Andrew, and we had such a wonderful chemistry and connection in the film, that coming back to work and just, speaking these lines, I just kind of dropped right into the character like I'd never left. It was amazing. So I didn't have to do that kind of exterior research. I was really able to kind of just find it in my body again and then just drop right into it. And, from the table read on, we just knew it was working. And, thankfully, we were able to kind of just kind of go from there.
Matthew, what does Generation X say about Generation X, specifically about relationships, whether straight, gay, lesbian, et cetera?
Well, I think that the real takeaway is just that they're always challenging, no matter how unusual the circumstances are. And there's a variety of relationships that are explored in it, and starting with X. And Andrew, they have an unusual relationship because they've been together for a long time, and then they have been apart, but they're living together. So that's an awkward sort of a, you know, they have to sort of have a negotiation there. On top of that, we have X, who is, you know, working in sex work, which is very difficult for his partner to come to terms with again, and to consider, you know, do I want to get back together with this person is doing something that bothered me to begin with. So I think that's kind of interesting. And then I think with each episode, we have a new kind of approach to how relationships are working, because it's always someone who's hiring X, but their story is is kind of something that he has to react to. Like we have, a young gay kid who's a virgin, you know, who's trying to hire a sex worker, and of course he's not allowed to. We have someone who has like a very taboo sort of fantasy they want to play out. We have actually a female couple who hires him. So I think it's kind of exploring every different possible, every different possible way people can relate. So in that way, I think it's a lot broader than the original movie. And it's also, I think, very funny.
Six episodes of Boy Culture, Generation X, are now available on everywhere from Amazon Prime Video to Samsung Smart TV sets to Roku to Apple TV set-top boxes and more. We are speaking with the co-writer of the series, Matthew Rettenmann. He joins me here in New York. And out in Southern California, we've got the key star of the series, Derek Magyar. And they're both with us live this half hour on this Friday afternoon edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon, I'm also with you in New York, 51 degrees near the bottom of the hour. You have a question or comment, many minutes with our two. Make a call, 652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonAppley04 by name. This month marks the 40th anniversary of ABC's presentation of one of the most original and one of the most unique and critically acclaimed made-for-TV movies ever, The Day After. Next Wednesday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, among our guests, we will have a University of Southern California professor named David Craig. He has just written a brand new book about the impact of The Day After called Apocalypse Television, and we'll offer it hopefully soon as a special classic trivia question prize. David Craig, the author of Apocalypse Television, about the 40th anniversary of The Day After and its impact on where we are in this world. He will be with us live as our opening guest on Tomorrow Will Be Televised next Wednesday. Plus, we'll also have one of the key executives of Future Today, a very popular distributor of ad-supported channels such as Happy Kids and many more. Jennifer D'Alessandro will be with us from Future Today. We've covered them before. We'll find out what is happening with them now. That's coming up next Wednesday. Read your Meese New Pacific right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Derek, was there ever a possibility that this series would be offered on a Netflix or a Peacock or a Max or any other mega content service? Why was the decision made to make this an independent feature, an independent series that would be presented to Samsung directly or to Roku directly or to people taking Apple's set-top box?
That's probably not the best question for me. Probably more a question for the producers, because that sort of was their role. I executive produced, but I sort of had a passive hand in it. But I really think that they were the ones to kind of shepherd what they felt was best in terms of how to get the most exposure for the show. And I'm sure that various platforms were considered, and that Stephen Israel, Philip Pierce, Alan as well. I mean, I think that, that everybody kind of put their heads together in terms of doing what they thought was going to be the best for the series. So that's the most I can give you on that.
Well, it's a very interesting way to distribute a show, and it might be a forerunner of things to come, particularly in this post-strike period here. I'm sorry, go ahead, Matthew.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just going to say it also really kind of puts power in the hands of the people who've been waiting to see it. So they have various options. They don't have to go to one place, and they can rent it or they can own it at very different places. And it's working so far. I think we're hearing that a lot of people are going ahead and renting it and also buying it. And it was a long time coming, so we wanted to make sure that people were able to get it as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, staying with you, have you and Derek gotten any feedback from viewers so far to the series? Because this is the first week of the presentation on all these places.
Yeah, it's funny you say it. I actually just got a text from someone who's a very critical person. So I listened to what they say, and he said, I watched this with a friend of mine who has been a sex worker, and I haven't even told Derek this yet. He said he really loved it. He thought it was hilarious. He thought it was, he thought the drama was very compelling. And he recognized so many things. He said, they really got this right. So I felt that was really the highest compliment, because we really wanted to make sure
that
we're, along with, titillating and entertaining, we want to make sure we're getting it right and that we're being true to life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love hearing that. Thank you for sharing that, Matthew.
And Derek, any feedback for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's only been a couple of days, but everything that I'm hearing so far, people are really enjoying it. I think there's a lot of different things to take from it that are, I think, really relevant to the world we're living in right now. And there's a real awareness that I think the series has. That I'm sure a lot of it was intentional. Some of it probably even happened just as a gift. But I really feel that you know, everything that I'm hearing from people is that they're able to pull something from a different episode, as well as sort of following the characters that they have cared about for so long, and really the relationship between X and Andrew, which I think is what I'm hearing the most in terms of feedback and what people want and are getting and not getting in terms of what the – I'm going to try not to spoil anything in terms of what happens between X and Andrew. But what's great about each one of the episodes is that it really focuses on a different thematic element that I think is really very relevant and topical to conversations and things that are happening today. Gay shaming, all sorts of different things. Again, I want to be not giving things away. I want people to experience it for themselves. But everything that I've heard so far has been really, really flattering, and then I think people are really finding something or things that they're finding very personal that they can personally relate to. And that, to me, is the ultimate flattery.
Matthew, we'll end on this. Is there a season two possible? And if not, what's next for you in television?
You got the money, honey. We got the time. Yeah, we are ready to go. All we're waiting for is you know, a green light. So I know that everyone, all the major players are ready to do that. It just depends on if it's greenlit. But yeah, we definitely would love to do that. As far as what's next, I mean, a lot of different things. Mostly, I'm doing my own writing. Like, for, I just finished an oral history of the magazine Mandate, which is kind of an important gay adult magazine in the 70s, and that's going to be coming out next year. And I've got a screenplay, and you know, I'm just kind of keeping myself busy.
And Derek, what about you, aside from the fact that you and your life partner have a new morsel in the family to feed?
it's been strange times, obviously, kind of balancing work with the strike. But I've been staying busy. I have a film that I'm working on that I can't say too much about, but I'm very, very excited about. It's something that we've been working on almost for 3 years, and it's finally going to happen in 2024. It's set in 1969. It's based on a true story set in the Florida Everglades, and it's you know, really interesting. So we've been working on that. I'm one of three writers on that, as well as an actor. And I've been doing that. And that's really the majority of the work, because things have been quite quiet as it relates to the strike. So, you know, I'm lucky that I also have a business where I actually kind of developed a company, a production company that I'm, while the strike was happening, I noticed, you know, a lot of people in real estate shoot videos for homes, but they lack a certain kind of joie de vivre, a sort of panache. And so I started a company where I shot videos for, you know, kind of higher end homes. And it's been really fun and kind of exciting. Just doing things to stay busy until this is behind us. And now I'm full steam ahead on my feature film, which is called River of Grass. It's like, is going to shoot in the fall of 2024. So I'm very excited about that. And we also have a short film that we just finished, of River of Grass as well, which is partly a proof of concept that I can't wait for people to see, which
is going to be premiering at various festivals throughout the next year.
The name of the series, again, is called Boy Culture Generation X. It is now playing an independent release on such places as Roku, Samsung Smart TV sets, Apple TV set-top boxes, Amazon Prime Video, and many other places near you. For more details about the series online and how you can get it, go to www.boyculture.com. That's www.boyculture, all one phrase, .com. Derek, Matthew, thank you both very much for coming on. Congratulations on the early success of the series. Hopefully this is the first of many other seasons to come and much more television for both of you. And Derek, congratulations to you and your wife on the birth 2 weeks ago of your wonderful new part of life, and hopefully all the greatest.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Derek and Matthew. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
You too.
Bye.
You too. All right. All right. Bye-bye.
Derek Magyar and Matthew Rinneman joining us live from Los Angeles, or I should say Southern California and New York, respectively. Once again, www.boyculture.com. More tomorrow, televised coming away. First, some words from our wonderful sponsor, Laird Superfood. Are you ready to feel more energized, focused, and supported? Go to LairdSuperfood.com and add nourishing plant-based foods to fuel you from sunrise to sunset. Use the promo code TELEVISE at checkout to save 15% off your purchase today. If you're working and looking for a better coffee experience, for example, try out Laird Superfood Creamers. They're produced from high-quality, all-natural ingredients, sustainably sourced, and whole food all the way. There's no artificial flavors, colors, or additives. Ramp up your energy and focus today with Laird Superfood Creamers. They're available at LairdSuperfood.com. That's LairdSuperfood.com. And remember, you save 15% off your purchase when you use the promo code TELEVISE at checkout. When we come back, one of the top executives in all of television is back with the new MGM Plus series premiering on Sunday night, Beacon 23. That's Glenn Mazzara. He will join us live from Los Angeles as we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching over 95 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out the Big Brother Recap Show. Find out more about the new Reindeer Games offshoot coming your way next month. That's all on the Big Brother Recap Show on BTR tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our next half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, special two-hour Friday edition. And this half hour is brought to you by online grocery Sun and Swell, offering a world of delicious snacks and pantry faves anytime. Tom Nab, I'm with you live from New Web, New York. Good to have you with us. 51 degrees at the bottom of the hour. More great stuff over the next 90 minutes ahead. So stick around with us and make a phone call to react to our guest, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our next guest is very simply one of the best executive producers in all of scripted television. His credits include The Walking Dead, the Emmy Award winning The Shield, Crash, the TV adaptation of the Oscar-winning movie where we had him on this program when that was made, and now the new series Beacon 23 starring Lena Headey of Game of Thrones fame. It premieres this Sunday night on MGM+. Joining us live in an inner radio exclusive from Los Angeles, Glenn Mazzara. Glenn, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It is great to have you back, Glenn. I know that earlier today you were heard on TV's Top 5 of The Hollywood Reporter. You had some things to say about the end of the SAG after strike and where things go. Please let us know what you said.
Oh, you know, I'm just very excited for SAG. I feel if the negotiating committee felt that they got the deal that they needed, you know, I'm incredibly happy for them. I think there's a lot of goodwill between the Writers Guild and SAG-AFTRA. You know, SAG-AFTRA going out on strike, it just was really gave the Writers Guild a lot of leverage. It was a huge boost of morale. So we kind of felt like we were in the trenches together, and I'm just very, very happy for them that they feel that they got the deal where they can get everybody back to work. So I think it's a time for celebration.
Is there anything that everybody involved could have done to have these deals happen quicker? For example, if AMPTP, the TV producers of Who's Alliance, if that alliance had decided, for example, not to do this, we would negotiate with one union first, then the next, directors, writers, actors, it turned out, but negotiate with everybody at the same time. The way that, for example, the United Auto Workers, whatever you thought about their actions, did with Ford, GM, and Stellantra to get those deals within 2 weeks of striking everybody, Could this have helped things?
I don't think that would be the way to go because, you know, I was not on the negotiating committee this time, but I've been on it previously. I was on it in 2017. But, you know, I've listened a lot to David Goodman and Chris Kaiser and Ellen Stutzman. I've listened to what their thoughts are after the strike. And I'm very friendly with David and Chris. And, you know, these issues are different for each guild. Okay, we have different issues. So there is a pattern bargaining, but they do have different issues. I think what could have been done and what David and Chris have said elsewhere is, you know, and they said it beforehand, there was no reason to take this strike. You know, there was no reason that we had to take a strike if the CEOs negotiated in good faith. Instead, what happens is the AMPDP is there to say no. They said no. It took them a long time to, you know, bring this to the CEOs. And once the CEOs engaged, it took them a little while to get up complexity of the issues. But then they got it done in a couple of days. They got the Writers Guild deal done in a few days. Now, I think SAG took a little longer once the CEOs engaged. But most of the strike was that the unions were not discussing, were not at the table with the CEOs. You know, they were at the table with the AMPDP, which is there to say no to labor. So the issues got worked out once the higher-ups engaged. So I think that AMPTP system is broken. It's not that the asks were broken or that the way that the unions were negotiating was a problem. It was the way that you have this layer that's in there to kind of break the unions and make sure that, you know, and to frustrate us and all of that stuff. And they miscalculated this time. They had a playbook that was outdated. They didn't understand the issues. They didn't understand the business is changing. And they really thought they were going to, you know, frustrate us. And I honestly think they completely misread the situation.
We're going to have more to say about that in our final half hour, Glenn. And you raised some wonderful points, too, which we're going to harp on. In that half hour about lessons learned about this whole situation, as well as mm-hmm. who won and who lost out of it. But I will give you a little heads up. AMPTP has a lot to answer for in a lot of ways, and we'll get into them a little bit later on. Glenn Mazzara, the executive producer of the new MGM Plus series, Beacon 23. He is our guest this half hour live from Los Angeles on Tomorrow Be Televised. And let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Glenn, Beacon 23 is your latest project. How did you get involved with it?
The project was created by Zach Penn. It's based on a novel by Hugh Howey, who also wrote a book called Wool, which is the basis of, I think it's on Apple TV's Silo. Okay, so Hugh's a very good writer. I had read Wool in the past. I bumped into Zach. I'm friendly with Zach. We had both been on the board of directors at the Writers Guild a few years ago. And he told me he was adapting this work and that, you know, they were shooting two seasons back to back. And it's a big shoot, you know, and he was telling me Lena Headey was in it. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of her work from Game of Thrones. Stephon James, who had been in Homecoming, and If Beale Street Could Talk. So it sounded very interesting, and he said he needed some help coming in to sort of punch up some scripts and all of that. So I said I'd love to be a part of it. I love sci-fi. I like, you know, I love Hugh's writing. And when I read Zach's script, I really saw, oh, this is a very personal thriller in space. This is not your usual big sci-fi space opera epic. This was, you know, felt very, very personal and interesting and felt fresh. So I started working on the show, and then since the shoot was going on for a while, Zach had to step off the show. He had some other engagements, and then there was another woman named Joy Blake, a terrific writer. We co-show ran season two as that was working, but then I ended up taking over all of the post responsibilities and becoming the showrunner for season one. And that afforded me a great opportunity because as we were, it's a gift to have two seasons back to back where you can move storylines around and combine things and set up things and all of that. So we were really able to, you know, kind of use this unique vision to develop the material in a way that I think will be very surprising and entertaining for the audience.
Beacon 23 refers to this group of lighthouses that span all sorts of areas of the galaxy where people who travel back and forth, up and down, sideways the galaxy have a chance to rest their bones, if you will. And what makes it interesting is that each beacon has two people in charge. One is a human being, and one is an AI being. Did you find it ironic, by the way, that AI, which, as it turned out, was one of the major sticking points in the Writers Guild situation, in the Actors Guild situation, that AI is a central part of this series?
You know what? That's a fantastic question, because when I started working on the show, I wasn't really interested in AI. I didn't know much about it. I hadn't read anything about it. I thought that it was kind of very, you know, I thought a lot of the tropes that I had seen in other shows were very similar. And I saw that this was very, very important to Zach. Zach had very clear mythology laid out. He had a lot of thought. So I thought that was interesting, okay? It wasn't really where my heart was, but, you know, I was like, okay, this is interesting new material to explore. Then it becomes the core of the strike, or one of the cores of the strike, of both strikes. Now, all of a sudden, it's the conversation is very relevant. I'm very proud of a lot of the material that we wrote. I think that, you know, we're not just retreading what's already been said. I think we're kind of hopefully the audience will respond and think that we're adding to the conversation. So it became more important to me, and it made more sense as time went on. So after the strike ended, I was able to go back and kind of finish up post on some of the episodes and everything. So I've been back at work the past few weeks, and I'm glad. I mean, it was just one of those happy accidents, but it was really kind of a fun thing that came along.
Mm-hmm. There's also a little bit of the ghost of Mrs. Muir into this. If you remember that classic movie in the TV series, because
he deals with
this government agent played by Hetty, who gets involved with the character of Hallen, who is this ex-military man who runs the lighthouse, runs the beacon. And so there's this
That's kind of
clash of wills, clash of characters.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, that's interesting. You mentioned The Ghost of Mrs. Muir. I did love that show. You know, part of the isolation of these people trapped together, I felt when I started reading it, I said, this feels like a show that is influenced by the pandemic, but that it's not about the pandemic. You know, during the pandemic, we were all, you know, trapped in our homes with our families or friends or roommates or whoever, you know, or by ourselves facing isolation. That was hard. You know, and even if we loved the people we were with, we spent a lot of time, and I'm sure we drove them crazy, and they drove us crazy. So there was something about that that felt very relatable to me. You know, it felt very relevant. So I was interested in exploring that.
What was it like working with Lena and everybody else on the series? What did she bring to the character?
Well, listen, Lena's a star. I mean, she's a terrific actor. She's one of those actors that can play so many depths with so many layers with just a look. You know what I mean? And she just has like a strength. What I love about what she's playing in this role is she's playing a vulnerability. She's playing an empathy. You know, she's, first of all, you know, a badass in the show. And, you know, we see her tattoo. She has a very different look. She's not playing the buttoned up royal, you know, Cersei from Game of Thrones. This is very, very different. You know, there's action, there's thriller stuff, there's cool stuff. But then the character has such an inner life that at some point we wanted to know more about that. You know, we wanted, like, there were many times when she played something a certain way, or she said something a certain way, or gave a look. And it was inspiring to us as writers to say, okay, why is she doing that? Oh, maybe the character feels this, and then it would generate a future story. So, you know, it's really exciting when you have such a talented actor that inspires and generates story and gives you more to play with. It's you know, it was fantastic.
This show has had an incredible road to get to MGM Plus and get to viewers on Sunday night, because originally it was supposed to be one of the Spectrum originals on Charter Communications Spectrum Systems, cable systems, and video on demand. And then when they decided to fold the shop, well, actually, there was a deal they made with AMC Network to help develop content that would also play on AMC. And then AMC took it on, and then MGM Plus decided to take it on. What do you make of the road that this show took to finally get on Sunday night?
Well, you know what? I feel like it's you know, the little engine that could, you know. And, you know, I'm very happy that it's at MGM Plus. I think they have very good programming. I like them. I think they're, you know, an exciting place to be, in all honesty. You know, Michael Wright is the head of MGM Plus. I worked with Michael back when he was on TNT. I did a show for him. I ran a show there. And we, you know, I had a great experience and learned a lot from him. So I feel good about that. The show was sold to MGM during the strike, so I wasn't involved in that sale, you know. But I will say that MGM's excited. Michael has told me he wanted this property. It ended up, you know, and so he's happy that, you know, it's finally on MGM Plus. But I'll say, you know, one of the things that I have learned as a writer and a producer who's been doing this for 25 years is these decisions are out of our hands. You know, you do something for an executive, the executive moves on. You know, I once did a show called Damien that started on Lifetime. It got moved to A&E. You know, that turned out to be a good experience. I've had studios merge. I've had studios go away. You know, and as a producer, it can be frustrating, but, you know, you can't really worry about it. It's just these huge forces. So you just hope that the show finds a home where people care about it and they support it and they like it. They like it as fans. And I think that is true for MGM Plus. You know, the people at Spectrum were terrific to work with. I worked with them for a little bit, you know, for a lot, not just a little bit, you know. But the people at MGM are really supporting the show. They're excited about it. You know, I've worked on shows where things kind of get launched and people say, yeah, let's see what happens, and you can tell they're not really interested. I feel good about this launch, so I'm glad it's at MGM Plus.
You're in Glenn Mazzara. He is the executive producer of the new MGM Plus series, Beacon 23. It premieres, by the way, this coming Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Available on cable, satellite, also available on smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. If you have a question or comment with Glenn or remaining minutes with him, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up for the top of the hour, our classic trivia question of the week that we introduced on Monday's show. 5 prizes in play is your first emailing the correct answer. And coming up next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have the chief executive officer of a very interesting new venture called Unify. Do you ever have trouble picking up smart TV sets and smart devices searching for the programs you want to see? Well, we've got the head of Unify, which is now starting to play on smart TV sets and devices to help make the search a lot easier. Jeff Lawrence, the head of Unify, will be with us. That's next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. A couple weeks ago, we had Michael Hurst, who has Billy the Kid on MGM Plus, now in its second season, Glenn. And we talked about the fact that, you know, people have come to know him as an executive producer and creator of historical series. That's like his pigeonhole with The Tudors, with Billy the Kid, and other series he's done for all sorts of different places. You have had a very interesting experience as an executive producer. You've done contemporary drama like Crash, like The Shield. You've done genre drama like Beacon 23, like The Walking Dead. What do you make of your career 25 years into it?
That's a great question. you know what? I like having the flexibility to do a lot of different stuff. You know, I shot a pilot for Amazon based on Stephen King's Dark Tower. So that was kind of a big fantasy thing. I've done horror, you know, I've done, and I think it comes from that. I have a lot of different interests. You know, I read a lot, you know, and I can kind of, I want to immerse myself in these worlds. I'm also selective as to, you know, there are certain things I won't do that I just don't think I'm good at. You know what I mean? I would never do a legal show. I don't know anything about the law. You know what I mean? I just think there are better writers for that. So I feel like I've been lucky. I know a lot of writers kind of do get pigeonholed in something, and I've been careful. I've been careful not to do that. And part of what I do, if writers are listening, part of what I do is I educate my reps about what I'm interested in. You know, like I if I see someone is, you know, adapting a book or someone bought the rights to a book, I'm saying, oh, I know that author, or I'm a fan of that author, or this or that. I'm constantly telling my reps and my agents, here's what I'm interested in. So I think people feel I am an experienced producer. I can help produce a show, something of a big scale now. I'm kind of doing things that are on the bigger scale. But I think it's about remaining curious, you know, and kind of wanting to push yourself in imagination. I'm not, you know, once I figure something out, I want to move on. So with Beacon 23, for example, I love science fiction. I read a lot of science fiction. I watch a lot of science fiction. I had never actually worked on a science fiction show set in space. So it just came, it was like, you know, playing in a way, you know, you're getting to kind of figure things out. And I think if I have that enthusiasm and that joy in my work, hopefully I'll do a good job. I don't think you can do a good job making TV shows if you don't care, if you're not excited about the material as a fan would be. And so I always approach things. I always want to make shows that I want to watch.
And Glenn, just set the record straight about Michael, when we asked him about the pigeonhole thing, he doesn't mind it. He doesn't mind the fact that his career has been historical shows like Vikings on the History Channel and Vikings Valhalla on Netflix and The Tudors on Showtime and Billy the Kid, because he's so immersed in history, he feels that that is his big niche, and he feels that compulsion to bring these unique historical figures or historical eras to life. By the way, with Beacon 23, you're working with Boat Rocker, which is a really one of the great up-and-coming production companies around. They've got the up-and-coming Orphan Black series, Echoes. They'll be on AMC next year. Kristen Ritter is producing, I believe, as well as starring. American Rust is coming back, which was a show canceled by Showtime. They're a company that definitely is in a lot of different areas, and they seem to have a great track record.
Well, I'll say this about Boat Rocker. I really loved working with them. Okay, these people are filmmakers. They care. You know, I have worked for studios that are constantly, you know, just grinding you, you know, taking money away or whatever. That was not Boat Rocker. They wanted this show to be great. And they put their money where their mouth is, and they took the time. And sometimes, you know, you have challenges come up as you're shooting any show. And Boat Rocker would say, okay, what do you need to work this out? What do you need to, you know, get this done or whatever? And they were fully invested, really, really kind people, really a lot of fun. I had a great experience with Boat Rocker. You know, I really did. I was very surprised. I had not worked with any of them before, so it was a very pleasant find. You know, I really, really had a good time.
Glenn, what's next for you? If Beacon 23 clicks on MGM Plus with its viewers, is there another season coming up, or are there other projects you're going to be moving on to?
Well, we do have, you know, I have things in development as a writer. You always have things. But, you know, we do have a second season in the can, and we're just hopeful that the show does well and people respond and they enjoy it as much as we enjoyed making it, and that MGM would, you know, be interested in that second season. And then if there was, you know, I have ideas for a third season, and other places you can go. One of the things that was interesting about the show, and Zach really had this in his original design, is that even the show takes place in this claustrophobic lighthouse, we do, you know, not do time jumps like you would on a on another space show or something, but, you know, we kind of open up the narrative and show different characters at different times. You know, here's a beacon keeper from 100 years ago. And so we really do a lot of world building. And I have an idea I'm very, very excited about for season 3 and more. So I just hope it lands and the audience loves it and that, you know, we could keep playing in the sandbox. It's really been a joy.
Beacon 23, starring Lena Headey and others, premieres on MGM Plus this Sunday night, 9:10 Pacific time. Check your local news for where it is running on cable and satellite through MGM Plus. It's also available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles, depending on your area. For more details about the series online, go to www.mgmplus. That's www.mgmplus, not the plus sign, plus the word, mgmplus.com. Beacon 23, opening episode this Sunday night, 9:10 Eastern and Pacific time on MGM Plus. Glenn Mazar, great to have you back on the program after way too long. Congratulating you and everybody for finally getting this off the ground. Hopefully many more great successes in your career. It's been a delight to have you back. And hopefully next time around, we won't wait too long.
Thank you so much for having me. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
A pleasure, Glenn. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Glenn Mazar, executive producer of Beacon 23, joining us live from Los Angeles. Classic trivia question next after these words from Sun and Swell. Sun and Swell, in case you don't know, is the first online grocery store with a fine line, I mean a really fine line, of healthy, great-tasting foods that come to you in plastic-free, compostable packaging. You know, every item is 100% vegan, gluten-free, and free of added preservatives or ingredients like rolled oats, trail mix, apple pie bars, energy bites, banana chips, nuts, mango, you name it. Now, if you're looking for a more planet-friendly pantry, and I mean really planet-friendly, well, shop Sun Swell and get 20% off site-wide when you go to sunandswellfoods.com. That's sunswellfoods.com and use the promo code TELEVISE at checkout. That's 20% off your entire order when you use the promo code TELEVISE, T-E-L-E-V-I-S-E-D, at sunandswellfoods.com. Now time for our classic trivia question. Second time we're offering. We introduced it on Monday's show. We still don't have a winner. We're looking for our first winner in 2 months. And if your first correct answer, we got 5 prizes in store for you. We have a free Redbox movie night on the folks from Crackle Connect, which run Redbox. We've got a free Uber card, courtesy of AMC Networks. We have 2 wonderful musical CDs, Chicago's Greatest Hits, with songs like If You Leave Me Now, Saturday in the Park, Another Rainy Day in, guess where, New York City. Does anybody really know what time it is, and much more. And we've got the great Lifetime Women in Rock CD, with great performances by the likes of Laura Branigan, Linda Ronstadt, The Pretenders, Pat Benatar, Cyndi Lauper, and more. And we also have the wonderful book by former Non-Exposure Emmy-winning writer, producer Jeff Melvoin, which is running the show, Television from the Inside. Well, that could be yours if you know the answer to this question. What was the musical group on Fernwood Tonight and America Tonight? What was the musical group on Fernwood Tonight and America Tonight? By the way, episodes of both shows now running on YouTube. If you know the answer, email me, simonappleo4@yahoo.com. It's simonappleo4@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by today, end of today, we will post the question Saturday morning, tomorrow morning, Thursday morning on X and on Facebook. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Once again, the question, what was the musical group on Fernwood Tonight and America Tonight? The answer you will find when the episodes play there on YouTube. Again, simonappleo4@yahoo.com. That's the email you use to get in and win. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so, and all the very best. Coming up in our next half hour, we've got Chris Wagner, the executive producer of USA Network's popular late-night show, Barmageddon. Season 2 begins after Monday Night Raw next Monday night. He'll join us live from Los Angeles. Plus, in our extended takeaway of the week, last half hour, we'll get into the SAG-AFTRA settlement, what it means for television, how soon will your favorite broadcast and cable shows get back with original new episodes, and what are the lessons learned, the winners and losers of this whole summer and fall of strikes, first by the Writers Guild and then by Screen Actors Guild after. We'll get into all of that after we pause at the bottom of the hour or the top of the hour, I should say, for Women in Education. Our first hour of this two-hour edition of Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you by online grocery Sun and Swell, offering a world of delicious snacks and pantry faves anytime. And by Laird Superfood, the plant-based coffee creamers and other products that fuel you from sunrise to sunset. Again, we'll be back with our second hour of the program after we pause at the top of this hour for web identification. www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com together reach over 95 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love terrific, unique music, check out the Hit Unique Show. It's getting more popular on BTR every week. And the next episode is this Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. That's the Hit Unique Show, Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome to our second hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon, day before Veterans Day 2023. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, and welcome to those of you joining us on our brand new podcast affiliates, Podcast Index and Podverse. Tommy Atbaum with you along for the ride, 51 degrees at the top of this hour, and this half hour of our program is brought to you today by the wonderful people at BlendJet. It's the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks. That's smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go, wherever you go. Happy to have you aboard. We have a wonderful guest coming away in the next half hour. We invite you to be part of the program. So if you just joined us, get involved. How do you do it? You pick up the phone, you call in, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number is good anywhere. You catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. Don't forget, we have our chat room biz as well. It's SimonApple04 by name. So if you're shy about the phone, use the room, SimonApple04. And you'll find that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And, of course, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on that Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions of being live with you. For those of you who missed the opening half hour, we should let you know that the National Board of the Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA, at any moment may be finally approving the agreement that was reached on Wednesday night, the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers. They are scheduled to have a press conference at the top of the next hour in Los Angeles, which will also be available by live stream to us here in New York and around the country. Again, that is scheduled to take place with details about the agreement. The head of SAG-AFTRA, Fran Drescher, and Duncan Crabtree, Ireland chief negotiator, is scheduled to be leading that event, which is being for the press. Again, that's taking place in Los Angeles. That is supposed to happen at the top of the next hour. Well, about a year ago, we introduced you to a very unique late-night entry coming after Monday Night Raw on USA Network. It was called Barmageddon. And a lot of people were very surprised to find out how very interested people were in watching that show. In fact, a number of the episodes had more than 1 million viewers. And it turned out to be USA Network's biggest new late-night sensation in quite some time. This Monday night, it is back, 11 p.m. Eastern Pacific, after Monday Night Raw. Joining us live from Los Angeles, executive producer Chris Wagner. Chris, welcome in.
Hey, what's up, Simon? Thanks for having me again.
It is a pleasure to have you back. And, your series surprised a whale of a lot of people when it was on USA Network last fall.
I think we were all pleasantly surprised. I mean, look, when Lee, Blake, and Carson created it, we knew it was going to do well because it's just such an epic idea. But, I mean, the ratings blew everyone away. It was amazing.
What do you think the public really got into Barmageddon? What about the show? What about how it was designed? What about the hosts? What about the games themselves? What really, you know, triggered the interest?
I think it's that lightning in a bottle. Look, Blake, Carson, and Nikki are all amazing in front of the camera, and I think they're relatable for the rest of America. I think the games are insanely fun, and they're all games that we've all played on a smaller level, of course, in a bar or in our fraternity. So it's fun to see, like, a supersized bar game. And the USA marketing team has actually been taking a few of the games around the country. And it's just a fun, easy show to understand. And you get to see celebrities, like, truly be themselves. Like, they let loose. They have fun. All of it's very authentic. So I think it's those three factors that led to it to just being this hit.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like preparing the second season with sort of, I'm sure, a lot of people thinking, you know, how are they going to top this?
I mean, it was awesome. Like, this is a show. I just did a post today. Like, it's the people behind the camera, the people in front of the camera. It's one of those shows that just it's such a pleasure and joy to work on. But prepping it was even more fun. Excuse me. Because at first, I don't know that anybody had their head wrapped around about how great of a show it'd be. So once the season one ended and the ratings were through the roof, it's just everybody went in with a great attitude and having a ton of fun. Us, the network, the talent. So it was a lot. It's my favorite show to do.
Mm-hmm. When you decided to get back into production for season two, how was the determination made about which games would be back for season two and how many new games would be put in the rotation?
You know, it was a combination of us working the network. And like I said, Lee, Blake, and Carson actually created the show. Lee Metzger, who brought in White Label, they created it. They were passionate about some games that I think all of us really loved. And it gave us an opportunity to see, you know, you look at the episodes, see the ratings, how it correlates with the games involved or the talent involved. And like, it gave us an opportunity to have the analytics of like, what were the best games, the most popular games, and what like, look, I loved them all last year. Don't get me wrong, but it was exciting to see the new ones and the names are pretty ridiculous.
Dark Northwest Media, one of our favorite chat room people, is back in the chat room. He just gave us the yellow hand thumbs up, so thank you for that. If you have a question or comment, duck, put it in the room, or use the phone, 646-652-2906. I noticed that, first of all, tell us about the games that are coming back and the games that are coming in new.
That is a great question. Hold on, I got to look at my notes for this one because there's 16 games.
Well, I know you got Cornhole. That's back.
The Air Cannon Cornhole came back. Horn Stars did not. Drunken Axel did. Buzzwords did. King Pong did. Just the Tip did. And then we added Sharks, which is Shelton Darts. Beer Bomb, and Horse on a Horse in Foreplay, as well as
I understand. Here's a couple of games I've got on my press release. Tell us what Fool's Ball is.
It's life-size foosball. Like, you know how at any bar or really any family's house, a lot of families' houses, you play foosball. Well, in this one, Blake and Carson are the goalies, and then the two celebrities play against each other and they're strapped into a pole. So it's essentially, it's a giant foosball table with the celebrities playing. Nikki's hosting as the referee and Blake and Sheldon are playing goalie. That one was my favorite. It was so much fun. It was so great to see. And like, everybody did it, realized how ridiculous it was. So they had a blast.
And there's another one also I see called Tic Tac Throwdown. That sounds appetizing.
It was, did you say Tic Tac Throwdown?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting is a great word for it. But again, it's another one where just everybody's so authentic. And I can say that about every game because every celebrity is just so authentically themselves. And everyone loved it. It was very cool it's very cool to be a part of. It's one of those moments where in time you feel insanely grateful to be on a show like this. And there's only been one other show, it was Rockstar at CBS for Mark Burnett, that I felt like this, where everything is just, everyone's great to deal with. And it's a fun, fun show.
Farmageddon begins its second season this Monday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on U.S. Network, right after WWE Monday Night Raw. And we've got, as we did last year, we've got the executive producer, and that, of course, is Chris Wagner. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Alba with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us, whether you're catching us live or we're catching us on more than 40 podcast sites. And again, I want to welcome those of you coming in for the first time on our newest podcast affiliates this week, Podcast Index and Podverse. If you have a question or comment for Chris, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, our very good friend in the chat room, Duck Northwest Media, already in the room. He's got the thumbs up in yellow already with us. We have three episodes coming your way next week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then the following week, our annual Thanksgiving tradition, our Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, back-to-back-to-back Thanksgiving episodes, all live, all with great guests. Next Monday on Tomorrow We Televise, we're going to find out what the latest is with the Next Generation TV movement from Pearl TV Managing Director Ann Schell. She's been on the program before. And Pearl TV, one of the major advocates of next-gen television, where local stations and station groups are rolling out special television sets or upgraded smart TV sets that allow you to do all sorts of things interactively and with more channels, interactive advertising, interactive options, et cetera, et cetera. Ann Schell from Pearl TV. Next Monday, our lead guest, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Chris, tell us which celebrities have decided to come back for a second go, and who are some of the newbies this time?
Yeah, absolutely. So Blake and Gwen are in it again. They play each other, which is very cool, because I just saw Blake on Jimmy Kimmel talking about how he didn't know Gwen was competitive, and then it comes out. So that was super fun. I think, you know, Kelly Clarkson, Michelle Rodriguez are this Monday, and that had been, I did American Idol season one with Kelly, so it was good to reunite with her. You've got, I'm looking at my list, David Arquette versus Colby Kalat. Kalat? Gabriel Iglesias versus Jelly Roll. Yep. Carly Pierce versus Boys to Men, who my friend Joe Mulvihill is their manager, and he suggested them, so it was great that that worked out. And then Chris Hardwick versus Rob Riggle. Chris Hardwick went to my high school, so it was cool to see him. And Rob Riggle is ever the utmost professional and just good human.
And you've also got Bill Engvall. You got Nikki Glaser. You got to learn along. Blake, by the way, has got not one, not two, but three episodes where he gets challenged. Boy, he takes he not only hosts and helps design the games, he also takes a lot of punishment.
Yeah.
Or at least he's
amazing. Yeah, and I forgot to tell you this. Like, we're doing a holiday special this year. It's actually called the Holiday Bartacular, and it's Blake versus Ice-T, which is pretty good. Yeah, Blake's awesome.
And I should point
Blake
out
is,
that you're also going primetime on NBC with that special.
Yes, correct. I know, which is big. It's a family-friendly show, and I know that may sound silly due to its time slot, but, like, it's – there's no cussing. You don't see anything ridiculous. Like, it is just celebrities having fun in their authentic selves. And you get to see, like, them bond. Most of them know each other personally, but it's an opportunity for, like, them to hang out if they haven't, and just in a regular, casual bar setting.
And for that one, I understand that all the games are new. You've got Mary Axmas, you've got Doodle All the Way, you got a little drummer boy and girl stunt. You got a reindeer games. You're going to have it earlier than Big Brother, which, as we announced in our news notes, they've got a Big Brother Reindeer Game spinoff happening on CBS later in the month. What was it like for you and your team to come up with this whole lineup of games for one particular episode?
I realize how you would see that, but it isn't actually. It is renamed around a Christmas-themed item. So you're going to see the same games you've seen all season two, some from season one, but it's just got a Christmas twang to it.
Mm-hmm. You know, when we've had producers of The Price is Right on CBS on this program over the years, I've always tried to ask them. Excuse me?
Who was it?
Well, Mike Richards was on our show a number of times, four or five times. We
yeah.
really enjoyed having him.
I know
Evan
him.
Waffle, who's the current executive producer. And by the way, I really
yeah,
hope
I
he might get back
them.
Into television. You know, he's suffered a lot, obviously, because of the whole Jeopardy brouhaha. And I hope that at some point he does get back, because he did a great job with for 10 years with Let's Make a Deal, with Price is Right at the same time. He also did a great job with Wheel of Fortune and the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with Jimmy Kimmel. So I just hope that at some point he gets the opportunity to come back and redeem himself.
Absolutely. And, like, I know them. Yes, on Wheel of Redemption. Well played. I know both of them really well. Mike actually married a college friend of mine, so I'll see them here and there, but both super good people.
And Mike, by the way, was one of our best guests ever. No question was beyond him. He would answer any question, no matter how controversial or whatever it might be. He was just absolutely great to be on. And I hope, again, he will come back.
He used to be a host, too, so that makes perfect sense that he would answer every question with flying colors. And then you got me, Simon. Quite the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. But the point I was getting at was that we always try to ask, like, is there sort of, how do you figure out which games you will do which episode? Because that's the thing about Price is Right is, and also a little bit with Let's Make a Deal, is you never know what is going to be on. There's no rhyme or reason in terms of what games go on what episode. So I'm curious, is there a rhyme or reason, particularly in the second season, with like what games are played by what contestants on what episodes?
Well, it's a few reasons, right? It's A, which celebrity we think is going to be in that episode. Two, it's which are the favorite games. And three, we shoot in Blake's bar, Old Red, in Nashville, which is, for a bar, it's massive. For a television show, it's not. So it's also based around logistics to an extent.
Talk about Chris Hardwick, because Chris, you know, has been a game show host. And At Midnight,
yeah,
one of his best efforts, he's doing The Wall right now for LeBron James NBC. And he did At Midnight. It was great. And, of course, that show is being revived.
Yeah.
On CBS next year is After Midnight. They just picked the new host. And we had Jack Martin, who was the executive, one of the key people behind Deal or No Deal with Scott St. John. We just had him on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
He's doing Raid the Cage, which is on CBS tonight. It was marvelous. And he's doing At Midnight. And I know he was involved,
yep,
in the original series. So what was it like? I'm just curious, what was it like, you know, having Chris on your show?
He's awesome. I worked with Andrew Glassman in developing The Wall, or during the development period, so I met him then also. I mean, you know who my ultimate live host is Ryan Seacrest. Chris reminds me of Ryan, just very professional, very approachable, funny, cares about the cast. He's a really, really great dude.
Got to ask, since you brought it up, how do you think he's going to do on Wheel of Fortune starting next year?
I think he's awesome. I think he's a great host, and I think he's a great live host. Like, At Midnight, you know, puts him in positions where he has to be just as quick as the comedians. So I think he's going to do really well. I'm excited to watch it.
Mm-hmm. One other thing about Farmageddon that I find really unique is that no matter how the games go for a contestant, that Wheel of Redemption gives them at least a shot to get back in there, get back in the game, if you will. How do viewers think about that, that Wheel of Redemption and how, any which way it goes?
I mean, the Wheel of Redemption, depending on where it could land, has some,
mm-hmm,
some pretty grotesque challenges. The drinking and the eating ones, like, there's celebrities that won't always do it or won't always finish it, I should say. You know, like sardine, mustard, Kahlua. Not Kahlua, not alcohol, but you know what I'm saying. So it's, I think my gut is, you know, it's almost too many times to get out of a loss. But I think also that's what makes it so much fun. Because if a celebrity loses, you then go to see them drink sardine shots, which is disgusting. And so I think it's really fun. And I think when you're watching it, you kind of get taken out of the gamification of it and get to see the celebrity doing stuff that probably I wouldn't do.
We are speaking with Chris Wagner. He is the executive producer of Farmageddon, second season coming your way next Monday night at the Monday Night Raw, 11 p.m. East Pacific Time on USA Network, available on cable and satellite. And Chris joins us live once again from Los Angeles this half hour here on Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm with you live from New York, the other side of the U.S. of A., 51 degrees cloudy here in the Big Apple. We're expecting temps in the 40s for a high over the weekend. By the way, to all of the veterans out there, thank you for your service. Have a wonderful Veterans Day tomorrow. And I know some places they've celebrated earlier today, like, for example, the New York Stock Exchange, right before with the opening bell, which was absolutely beautiful. Saw that on CNBC early this morning on Squawk Box. If you have a question or comment for Chris in our remaining moments with him, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Coming up for our final half hour, our special expanded takeaway of the week segment dealing with the SAG-AFTRA agreement that, as we speak, the national board there is probably going to vote unanimously in favor. And at the top of the hour, they will have a press conference with Fran Fresher and Junkin' Crafty Island out of Los Angeles. It will be available on live stream. and we hope to catch it and find out what else they have to say about that agreement and where things will go in TV. By the way, next Wednesday on Tomorrow Be Televised, one of our three episodes next week, we'll lead it off with the writer of a new book called Apocalypse Television. He's a professor at USC named David Craig. He is a big fan of a movie that came out 40 years ago on ABC, one of the best made-for-TV movies ever and one of the most controversial, The Day After. It's had a huge impact, David Craig believes, not only on the TV industry, but on the world at large. And we also hope to offer his book as a future classic trivia question prize. David Craig, the author of Apocalypse Television, he's one of our guests Wednesday. Also on the program, we'll have one of the key people of Future Today. That is the plumbing service that is doing a lot of interesting services, including the very popular kids and family-friendly Happy Kids, available on smart TV sets and smart devices. We'll have one of the key people there, Jennifer D'Alessandro. That's D'Alessandro. That's all Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Chris, we have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, go right ahead with Chris.
What's up,
hey,
Rick?
Chris. Not too much. I'm really wondering, I might have missed it when you said it earlier, it kind of went by fast, whether, like, do the hosts, like, does Carson, like, do they both come up with all the game shows? Is it more the producers, or was it a it sounded like you said, like, a third company or something that comes up with all the, like, catchy titles for the, like, cool games?
Yeah, so the original concept was developed during COVID with Blake and Carson when they're on set with The Voice in their dressing rooms. They called their good friend, Lee Metzger, who's my good friend, who was also one of the executive producers of The Voice and, you know, created this show with Blake and Carson. They are all – everyone is involved in the games. Everything is vetted by them. They are very – they'll come and play them. They're very active in ideas. So, yeah, I would say Lee, Carson, and Blake are the brains behind the games.
Very cool. One quick question. Do you think that it would be as popular if it wasn't celebrity-based?
And do we still have Blake, Carson, and Nikki?
No. I'm asking, like, how you would change the show if it wasn't, yeah, without them in it. Like, if Blake's on tour and it's now just regular people at the bar, like would it be as successful, or how would you change it to make it as successful?
Look, this show speaks, being in a fraternity, this show speaks to me especially well. I think overall it's still just a fun escape TV to watch. It's easy to watch. You don't have to watch previous episodes. It's a great standalone game show with really fun concepts and, like, nothing too serious, nothing negative. So, yeah, I do. I think celebrities always add to it. So I don't know if it would be, you know, 1-point-something viewers each week, but I think it'd still be in the 1-point-something, just a little lower. And I should say, too, Lee Metzger, to your point about company, him and Blake Shelton are now partners and have started their own production company.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, wishing you continued success. Yeah, and glad you guys were on last year, so I discovered the show right away. And really digging it, and have a great weekend. Thanks, Simon.
Thank you so much, man.
Rick.
Have
Thanks
a great
again.
Weekend, Rick.
Good luck with the Eagles, by the way. On Sunday. They are red hot, Jalen Hurst and company.
Yeah. Good call.
This is a bye week. It's a bye week, Simon.
Oh, it's a bye week. Oh, good.
Even better. I think we're playing next Monday night.
Monday
Night Football.
Yeah.
And a simulcast, so, ESPN and ABC. How about that? Thanks again, Rick. Have a super weekend. Rick Webb, our super fan from Philadelphia.
Thank you, Rick.
Here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Incidentally, Chris, given the fact you're on after Monday Night Raw, was there any thought about any of the WWE superstars playing this year?
Well, I think we saw some last year, right? Nikki Garcia's sister came in. So there's certainly an emphasis on that last year as the organic tie-in. And ultimately, it's obviously up to the network to decide when it's on. This year, still, it's we shoot in Nashville. It's not like we shoot in Los Angeles where everyone lives and can just drive down to the studio. So it's a little more laborious to get talent there. So there's certainly a consideration. There's just really an availability issue.
Yeah. Because I could see, like, people like Rhea Ripley or the folks in the Judgment Day or Roman Reigns or Bianca Belair or Seth freaking Rollins, I think they could give Barmageddon a real shot for the money.
Oh, I agree. And that's the thing, but, like, you don't even have – and you've seen it. Like, you don't even necessarily have to be an athlete or not. Like, anybody can play any of these games, and there's no, you know, physical qualifications. That's also what makes it so just entertaining.
It's a Christmas special, and by the way, for those who just missed it, it's on Monday, December 4th, 10 p.m. on NBC, your local NBC station. If it works out, is there a possibility that, if not for the second season, maybe for the third season and seasons to come, that you might get either a primetime slot, let's say a 10 p.m. slot or a 9 p.m. slot on USA Network, or a 9 to 10 maybe once in a while on NBC?
That would be very cool. Obviously, very far out of my control, but I'm sure everyone would be excited to talk about that.
Well, since you brought it up, what is in control for your immediate future in television? What do you got coming up aside from Barmageddon?
Look, it's been as you know, like the last 15 months of television have been really bleak for a multitude of reasons. And in the last month, we're starting to get development deals, series, specials. So I'm very excited, as I think everyone is, for 2024. I think it's going to get busy again. There may have been some overbuying, you know, a couple of years ago, so it's plateauing and kind of evening itself out. But I think 2024 is going to be really busy compared to what we've seen in the last 15 months. And I'm extremely excited.
Yeah, agreed. And everybody thinks that the era of peak TV or plentiful, as I call it, plentiful TV is over. Keep in mind that there's a lot of new channels out there, and they're all going for original scripted or unscripted television. Now that we got these strikes over, somebody might want to keep them in mind because they're going to be out there trying to go for original content.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, look, the golden age of TV, I think, like, secondly defined as the 50s or whatever. But I think that if golden age is talking about quantity, then we continue to be in it because there's never been so many buyers, so many outlets. Like, content is still king.
For sure. And we will leave it there. The new season, season 2 of Barmageddon, premieres this Monday night at the Monday Night Raw on USA Network, 11 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And the special Christmas edition of Barmageddon comes your way on Monday night, December 4th, an hour earlier, 10 p.m. on your local NBC station. So check your local listings for how USA Network shows up on cable and satellite and how NBC shows up on a station near you. For more details about the program online, go to www.usanetwork.com or usanetwork.com. And, of course, for the NBC presentation next month, NBC.com. That's usanetwork.com and NBC.com. Barmageddon Season 2, this coming Monday night, 11 p.m. Pacific Time. Christmas special on NBC, Monday, December 4th, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, an hour earlier. Chris Wagner, the executive producer of Barmageddon, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on how super Season 1 did. Got a hunch Season 2 is going to be even better, and hopefully more seasons to come.
Thank you so much for your time, Simon. I appreciate it, and always nice to talk to you.
Same here, Chris. Enjoy the weekend. Have fun.
You too. Take care.
You too. Chris Wagner from Barmageddon joining us live from Los Angeles. More Tomorrow Be Televised coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks at BlendJet. If your blender is bulky, a pain to operate, well, give BlendJet the opportunity to make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks an easy pleasure. You know, BlendJet is so portable to work up a smoothie at the office or your favorite protein booster at the local gym or a poolside margarita. It's quiet to operate and rechargeable on the go. So what are you waiting for? Go to BlendJet.com and grab yours today, and be sure to use the promo code TELEVISED to get 12% off your order. And get this, free two-day shipping. How's that for a deal? Remember, use the promo code TELEVISED to get 12% off your order and free two-day shipping. All you do is go to BlendJet.com and grab yours today. Blend anytime, anywhere with BlendJet. When we come back, our extended takeaway of the week on what transpired, finally, with the Screen Actors Guild AFTRA and AMPTP. What were the lessons learned from this whole summer and fall of strikes by both the actors and the writers, and who are really the winners and the losers? We'll get to all of that, and we want your phone calls and chat and reaction on it, too, after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com. Speaking of Common Tune, the best internet radio on the planet, reaching nearly 95 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you want to be up with sports, especially on a big weekend where you got college football, pro football, hockey, basketball, and a whole lot more, check out Post Time with the Greek on BTR. It's tomorrow, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:00 a.m. Pacific. I know he'll have everything to say about a big weekend of college football and pro football and hockey, pro basketball with the in-season tournament, and a whole lot more. Post Time with the Greek, tomorrow, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you can always find the best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of this two-hour pre-Veterans Day 2023 edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Appa, I'm with you along for the ride. Happy to have you with us. Thanks to all of our guests for being with us so far. We got a big, super takeaway of the week coming up, and we want to hear from you. So if you have any thoughts about the end of the Screen Actors Guild after strike, the Writers Guild strike, everybody going back to work now, give us a call. We want to hear you, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And you can also use our chat room, Simon Appa 04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Rick Webb, our super fan of Philadelphia in the room, Duck Northwest Media, our super fan on in the chat room, he's there too. So join them. We want to hear you. Sooner you do, sooner you interact with us. This final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised today is brought to you by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being with real hydrating. We're going to devote most of this half hour to an expanded version of our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week. It's where we discuss a development or two that happened during the week that you think will impact television currently or down the road. And obviously, the takeaway of the week that we're going to focus on, and why we're going to be doing it for most of this half hour, hopefully with you in by phone or chat room, is the agreement that was reached on Wednesday night between the Screen Actors Guild AFTRA and the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers, known as AMPTP. And with that agreement on Wednesday night, an agreement that almost didn't come off, because AMPTP actually gave the Screen Actors Guild AFTRA a warning. Make this deal by Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time, or the deal is off. We're not talking anymore until at least next year, next January to be specific, after New Year's Day. So finally, SAG-AFTRA made the deal. As we said at the top of this next hour, there is scheduled to be a news conference in Los Angeles where Fran Drescher, the head of Screen Actors Guild AFTRA, and their chief negotiator, Duncan Crabtree Ireland, are scheduled to meet the media. Hopefully we'll be on that call, because it's going to be live streamed here in New York and around the country for folks outside L.A., where we're going to find out more details about this agreement. And this agreement is definitely one that is worth, to SAG-AFTRA's estimation, over $1 billion. It will mean that actors who are working on mega content series, whether they're on Netflix or Peacock or Hulu or Disney Plus, et cetera, will get more payment if their shows work. They're also going to get more residuals for mega content series, especially if they're canceled after 1 or 2 or 3 years on the air. Plus, of course, artificial intelligence turned out to be, as we have said all along, the situation that really forced both strikes by the Writers Guild, by SAG-AFTRA, and ultimately a meeting of the minds, if you will, with AMPTP from both organizations on at least initial guidelines, parameters, benchmarks, guardrails, however you want to call it, on AI, finally led to deals. And as we speak, some shows have already resumed production. Others will over the weekend, early next week. The latest estimation, according to Leslie Goldberg, who with Daniel Feinberg had their TV's Top 5 podcast out this morning on the Hollywood Reporter website, THR.com, is that we will probably see broadcast network shows, scripted shows, back late January, for sure February of next year, and there'll probably be 10 to 13 episode seasons. In terms of cable series, same thing. Already the mega content services have a lot of product in the can for 2024. Some of it's still in post-production. That will be done very easily. So they're not going to have any big lag time in terms of the shows they've got in the can and the shows they're scheduled to be produced. And in case you haven't heard, the Daytime Emmy Awards that were canceled, postponed back in June, they're going to be now on CBS in mid-December. And the Emmy Awards, which were postponed from September they will finally go on Fox in January. That's the whole outlook for production as far as broadcast, cable, and so forth. And as we said, it looks like everybody is happy with the deal. They felt that in the case of the SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild and the Directors Guild beforehand, which didn't go to strike because they made a deal with AMPTP earlier on, that at least it's a start on AI. There is a realization, by the way, that that AI is a fast-moving target. There is a general sense that artificial intelligence is going to play a major role in how TV is created and produced all over the place, and certainly how it gets to you because of smart TV sets and smart devices that have the software. You're going to get the ability to interact with the TV set in all sorts of ways, some of which are developing now, others will down the road. And also that there will be, by the way, in the contract with SAG-AFTRA, my understanding is that if unique situations with AI come up, that AMPTP will consult with the Screen Actors Guild, and I believe that will also be with the Writers Guild, on development so that everybody's up to speed, so that if there needs to be adjustments in the contract, there can be. So, what lessons have been learned from this whole six-month situation? Well, I want to suggest a couple things, and it starts with something that Cynthia Littleton, one of the key editors of Variety, wrote in a column there yesterday. That frankly, the whole way that these agreements are contracted, are put together, are offered, are accepted, has to transform. The whole labor situation between these Hollywood-based organizations and the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers has to transform. It doesn't work. Glenn Mazzara, who was on our show an hour ago, was absolutely on the money. This situation does not work. Consider this. The United Auto Workers, whatever you think of their tactics with their recent strike, they were negotiating with Ford, Stellantis, formerly Chrysler, and General Motors at the same time. They did not do this practice of, we're negotiating with one organization first, wait to see how that works out or doesn't, then we'll go to another organization and see how that works out or doesn't, and then the final organization. They negotiated with everybody at the same time. And that's how they got the deals quick. Years ago, back in the 1960s, we've said this before, when the newspapers were threatening to go on strike, the newspaper publishers negotiated with everybody at the same time, the printers, the typesetters, the journalists of the newspaper guild, the delivery people, at the same time. They didn't do this one after the other weight game that wasted a lot of time. They negotiated with everybody, and for the most part, they either avoid a strike, or if there was a strike, it lasted less than a week. Again, they negotiated with everybody. United Parcel Service, earlier this year, there was a threat about the about going on strike. They didn't. Why? Because they negotiated with everybody they needed to negotiate with for a new contract at the same time. Why couldn't that have been done with the Directors Guild, the Writers Guild, and the Screen Actors Guild by AMPTP? Why this whole one union at a time deal? What a waste. What an absolute waste. And that leads me to the next lesson that's learned. By the way, one more thing. I believe that if everybody had been negotiating at the same time, this situation would not have lasted as long as it did. It did not need to last until early November to get done. This could have been rectified way back in June, way back in July at the latest. Number one, second lesson to be learned. AMPTP must reorganize. Again, Glenn Mazzara had this right. They screwed up big time. They came at it from an old school approach and not a new school approach. What they didn't realize is that these two big issues, residuals in a mega content environment and artificial intelligence, were the bottom line situations, and they didn't believe it. And every possible mistake that AMPTP could make, they did. Mistake number one, the negotiation with one union at a time. Mistake number two, not talking to the press, not talking to the public to get their side of things out. When we try to get them on the program, we go, we're rebuffed and said, we don't negotiate in the press. We're only going to give you and everybody else who inquires talking points in a press statement. Even now, the AMPTP has not come out, has not done a press conference, has not done an interview with anybody. They did come out with a statement Wednesday night saying, yay, ha-ha, we love it, you know, thank you, we got the deal done, it's great for everybody, et cetera, et cetera. Why aren't they coming out with a press conference? Why aren't they making their people available for interviews? And I might add that the head of the AMPTP, Carol Lombardini, should be fired. What a disgrace. She came into this bullheaded. She came into this intolerant. She came into this with old-school tactics. She didn't understand what she was getting into. Very clear about that. Really blew it up and didn't need to. If she had done her homework, again, the deal could have been done a lot sooner. It's very clear she didn't. She should be fired. Also, the public relations of AMPTP should be fired. And that crisis management PR unit that was brought in at the last minute, what did they do? Zip. They didn't know how to handle it. And if they had decided, you know what, let's talk to the press, let's be on this show, let's be on TV's Top 5, let's talk to CBS Mornings or Good Morning America or the Today Show, maybe, just maybe, the public would understand where we're coming from. That's not negotiating the press. That's letting people know where you're coming from. Secondly, AMPTP should have insisted that from the get-go, another great point that Glenn Mazzara made a half hour ago in our conversation with him earlier this afternoon, that the major CEOs, the Ted Sarandoses, the Donna Langleys from NBC Universal and so forth, should have been involved in these negotiations from the get-go. It would have shown the writers and the actors empathy, absolute empathy. And you got to give credit, by the way, to Ted Sarandos, because from the get-go, he had empathy. He talked about the fact that some of his members of the band were union members. So he had empathy, and maybe he should have taken the lead a lot earlier. And, yes, Bob Iger, unfortunately, that David Faber interview with CNBC backfired. And luckily, to his benefit, to his credit, he recapitulated and then got involved in the negotiations. And by the way, it was very interesting that once they did, with the Writers Guild, things changed. Things transformed. They should have done the same thing with the actors. But the fact that they got involved moved things along. They moved the needle. They should have moved the needle from the get-go. Another lesson learned is, if you're going to deal with issues like artificial intelligence and residuals for mega content services, don't wait until the last minute to start negotiating about them. This should have been handled way, way earlier. Do a heads up. Say, like, you know what? We see that we have a deadline with the contract, the current contract. Let's negotiate February, March, April. Why did it have to wait to the last minute? Do a heads up. Start talking. Don't wait to the last minute to be given the parameters of what was going on and the consequences. Do make the move. And one more lesson to be learned here. And this is a lesson, I think, for the Writers Guild and for the Screen Actors Guild AFTRA. And I hope somebody addresses it at that press conference, which starts in about 15 minutes. You don't wait for another organization, the people you're dealing with, to make a deal or to get to the bargaining table. You get to the bargaining table. You don't wait for, let's say if you're the Writers Guild, you don't wait for AMPTP to make the move. You make the move. The same thing with the actors. You don't wait for AMPTP to make a move. You make the move. I have never seen a situation, in 40 years of covering television, I have never seen a situation where there was so much lack of urgency, lack of initiative, lack of foresight, lack of guts to take the initiative as I've seen with the Writers Guild and then the actors. Unbelievable. It's like this waiting game stunk. Why do we have to wait so long for people to make moves? Why? Because people are waiting for the other side to make a move. No, you don't. You make the move. You know, the same thing, by the way, with again, going back to the United Workers Strike. You may hate the tactics I do. I think the president of the UAW really was a sleazeball, personally, based on what he tried to do. But give him credit this, they kept negotiating. They made the move. Even though they were on strike, they made the move to negotiate with General Motors and Ford and Solantra, and they got the deals. And by the way, something else too. Once you make the move to negotiate at the table, you stay there. You don't move. You don't do this like SAG-AFTRA did at one point. We'll negotiate on Monday, and we won't on Tuesday. Then we'll negotiate on Wednesday, and we won't on Thursday. Then we'll negotiate on Friday, and then not on the weekend, and so on and so forth. What kind of a practice is that? What does that show? Again, it shows lack of urgency and lack of initiative and a willingness to get things done. Those were strike-extending measures, and it did nobody any good. Certainly not those guilds, and certainly everybody else who was impacted by the lack of work, the lack of Hollywood activity and New York activity and elsewhere around the country that was waiting for these strikes to get settled. And I'm talking to cinematographers, the film editors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I hope that down the road, when the next contract develops, here's my suggestion for SAG-AFTRA and for the Writers Guild, WGA. Make the move, and when you do and you get to the bargaining table, stay there. Work it out. And if you have to go all night, go all night. Work it out. That's what the Directors Guild did. Whatever you think of the Directors Guild contract is up to you. And the Directors Guild made the deal because they stayed at the table. They didn't engage in malarkey, which this was. So, who are the winners? Who are the losers? Let's give you the winner. First, Netflix. Netflix is the winner because anybody who thought, oh, they spend too much on original content, they spend $16, $17 billion on original content. Well, guess what? When the stakes came to it, Netflix was ready with original programming the entire 6 months of the strike and this holiday season and a lot of 2024. Why? Because they spent that money wisely on original content. So anybody who poo-pooed, oh, we're spending $17, $18 billion a year on content, that content was well spent because they had the content when these unions went on strike. So Netflix comes out a winner. Another winner, the Directors Guild of America. Why? Because when they had a push come to shove, they were at the bargaining table and they made a deal. You can argue about how good the deal is. I'm sure there's some bad blood between SAG-AFTRA and Directors Guild. I noticed that SAG-AFTRA, when they made they asked about the deal, they didn't mention the Directors Guild. They mentioned the Writers Guild. They're sort of doing like, on the Directors Guild. No matter what, Directors Guild gets credit for making the deal and staying there. So they're a winner. Another winner, all the new channels that have come up and premiered on smart TV sets and smart devices and multi-channel bundles. Why? Because they gave viewers of broadcast and cable shows that were not happening this fall an alternative. And also on scripted television, another alternative. So those new channels out there, whether In the Black or others, not to mention the multi-channel bundles, Fubo, Tubi, Pluto TV, Freecast, et cetera, they had new channels and original products to show off, and they showed up very well. And you notice that over the course of the 6 months, viewership of fast channels, export channels, multi bundles, shot up beautifully. So those are your winners. Losers, broadcast shows, broadcast network series, scripted series. They're losing because they're not going to get into production until probably this week. They won't go on the air until late January or February. They'll have 13-episode seasons. And, in fact, a number of shows were canceled or moved to 2024-25 because of the length of the strikes. So they're losers. Number one, cable series also, same thing. AMPTP, huge loser for what we've talked about before. And again, I think Carol Lombardi, the president, should be fired. I think the PR people should be replaced. The crisis management firm should never have been hired because they didn't do their job. AMPTP committed every sin in the book. As far as SAG-AFTRA is concerned, Fran Drescher and Duncan Crabtree are considered both winners and losers. Winners because they stood up for their union, because they kept that in terms of keeping their eye on the prize. So in that way, they're a winner. The loser situation, because the time it took that was wasted to get the deal. And also, let's not forget that they almost sabotaged the deal with the per subscriber fee plan, which was a non-starter, according to AMPTP. And then, in more recent weeks, when they finally did this negotiating deal, this whole idea of let's get the whole package and look it over, and then also added last-minute bargaining on AI to add new dimensions to it. So SAG-AFTRA comes to me as both a winner and a loser. So that's where we stand. And ultimately, you are going to be the ultimate arbiter to see what happens from here. When the Writers Guild had their last strike in 2007, and it happened during the early days of this program's run, the broadcast networks lost big time because that was the beginning of the slide of viewership that continues to this very day. Had the writers' strike not gone as long as it did, maybe, just maybe, that season could have been salvaged. It didn't. It led to more unscripted shows, and it led to the entire primetime schedules of broadcast network television going down the drain. Viewership went down, and it hasn't recovered since. I have a hunch that'll be the same thing this time around, because now you have more competition, you have mega content services, you have all these services that have popped up on smart TV sets and smart devices. And let's not forget, in addition to the bundles like Tubi and Fubo and so forth, you also have the bundles that are now running through Samsung smart TV sets and Vizio smart TVs and LG smart TVs and Roku, et cetera, et cetera. And they're winners also. Again, they came up with unique original content because of these strikes. So what's your opinion about this? I'd love to hear from you. We still have a couple moments, so if you want to make a phone call or get into the chat room, do so at 646-652-2906 or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We'll wrap up the program after we have this message from the wonderful people at Sun and Swell. You know, Sun and Swell is the first online grocery store with a fine line. Sorry, I had that earlier. Oh, Liquid IV. There we go. All right. So now this message from Liquid IV. You know, Liquid IV is a new wellness routine that's easy to take and keeps you in hydrated shape. It's also a great-tasting drink mix in stick form that, when you add with water, delivers hydration to your body faster and more efficiently than water alone. What's more, you get five, that's right, five essential vitamins. That's B3, 5, 6, 12, and a good supply of vitamin C. And you get three times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. There's 12 flavors to drink from, all delicious and refreshing, like Concord Grape, passion fruit, and watermelon. And now there's a new line of drinks that's sugar-free, like green grape and peach. You know, Liquid IV is also gluten, dairy, and soy-free all the way. So if you want to find out more about it, go to liquidiv.com. It's liquidiv.com to order. And you get 20% off using the promo code TELEVISE at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using the promo code TELEVISE, TELEVISED, at liquidiv.com. That's liquidiv.com. So do check it out. And remember, Liquid IV is all about fueling life's adventures with real hydrating. All right. While we have a moment, let's one more time for those of you who came in this hour, let's give you that classic trivia question. We are looking for our first winner in 2 months. And if your first correct answer, five prizes in play, here is the question. What was the original music group on Fernwood Tonight and its sequel, America Tonight? Remember, that was the late night talk show spoof with Martin Mull playing Barth Gimbel. Spinoff of Mary Hartman. Jerry Hubbard was played by Fred Willard. And Frank Duvall, the great composer and actor, led the group. So, and you can see episodes now on YouTube, so you can get the answer very quickly. Again, what was the musical group on Fernwood Tonight and America Tonight? If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04 at Yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04 at Yahoo.com. Remember, you email, use that email, and when you do, enclose your name and your mailing address, so if you win the prizes, we get them to you as soon as possible. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow, Saturday, Veterans Day, on Facebook and X or Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and X or Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. So get involved today. We want to get a winner. Be nice this holiday weekend to make it happen, and it can be you. But you got to get in quickly because in order to win, you got to play in. So do so, and all the very best. One more time, I want to let you know that we have a wonderful bunch of episodes coming your way over the next 2 weeks. 3 episodes next week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then our big annual Thanksgiving week tradition, our triple header back-to-back-to-back, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all at 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, our lead guest will be the managing director of the next generation TV advocacy firm, Pearl TV, and Shell. Then Wednesday, we will have the writer of the new book, Apocalypse Television, how the day after the classic made-for-TV movie ABC premiered 40 years ago this month, not only changed the face of television, it changed the face of the world. And from Future Day, the folks behind such wonderful popular channels as Happy Kids will have executive Jennifer D'Alessandro. And finally, a week from today on our program, we'll have the chief executive officer of a new feature on smart TV sets and devices that allow you to make the search process a whale lot easier. It's called Unify. Jeff Lawrence is that CEO, and he'll be with us. It's coming your way Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Again, I want to thank all of our guests for being here, all of you for tuning in. Remember, if you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And check out our podcasts. They're available on more than 40 sites, including our brand newbies, and they are Podcast Index and Pro and Podburst. That's Podcast Index and Proburst. So check them out anytime you like. And remember, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? What's your thoughts about where TV's at, where it's going, especially in the light of the SAG-AFTRA and WGA agreements? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on social media, Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, we love hearing from you. When you respond, I respond back to you within 24 hours. That's our promise, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants, not those of Block Talk Radio and other producers of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager, and Dave Steinberg is head of content. Don't Be Televised this hour was brought to you today by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being with real hydrating, and by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. If you want to make a contribution to one of the major Israel emergency funds, go to ujafedny.org. That's the fund from the United Jewish Appeal and the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies. That's ujafedny.org. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. All of us at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, our podcast affiliates, want to wish all the veterans out there a very great commemorative Veterans Day. Thank you for your service. Thank you for what you continue to do in honor of this nation and this world. We will be back at noon, at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Monday, first of our 3 episodes that week. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune and Radio, and over at podcast and website affiliates. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe, please make it great, and please keep the prayers coming for the state of Israel and everyone who is praying for peace in the Middle East. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.